Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. Today's hosts are me, Jordan from Laytonville High School.
Myself, Jesse from Laytonville High School.
And myself, Kia from Laytonville High School.
Today our topic is the militarization of the police. Most people have seen images of the confrontations between police and protesters in Ferguson, Missouri, following the murder of Michael Brown, an unarmed 18-year-old. The police are in military garb with assault rifles, camouflage, and armored vehicles. The pictures are reminiscent of ones from Afghanistan, but instead of Afghani civilians, the protesters are American civilians.
If you look at the photos from our various Occupy protests from 2011, you can see similar confrontations between civilians and what appear to be military police. Go back to the WTO demonstrations in Seattle in 1999. And you will see police in riot gear with batons, rubber bullet shotguns, and tear gas going after demonstrators. But no one is in camouflage and there are no assault rifles. The outfits are police riot gear, a style that evolved from a formation of SWAT teams developed in the 1960s. SWAT is an acronym for Special Weapons and Tactics. The most famed early SWAT team was a platoon created by a LAPD Sheriff Daryl Gates in 1967, and he used the term SWAT to stand for Special Weapons Assault Team, but later changed it because it sounded too militaristic. The first Los Angeles SWAT team was intended to respond to and manage critical situations involving shootings while minimizing police casualties. Their first confrontation was with Black Panthers in the 1969. In 1974, there was a live TV coverage of the team converging with six members of the Symbionese Liberation Army who all died when the house they were hiding in burned to the ground. No police were injured.
In the 1980s, SWAT teams were mainly used for drug raids, justified by Richard Nixon's call for a war on drugs. Nationally, there were 3,000 SWAT raids per year in the 80s. Last year, there were 50,000 SWAT team raids, with 62% employment drug raids. Over the past 30 years, various incarnations of law enforcement agencies, like CAMP, COMET, the DEA, and the Department of Justice, have raided homes and land in our areas to seize marijuana. Most raids involved a warrant and a result in the destruction of crops and no arrests. Frequently, personal property is seized or destroyed. Until marijuana is fully legalized in California, these sorts of raids will continue. Mendocino County Sheriff Tom Allman made several attempts to provide a legitimate method for people to grow medical marijuana for state-approved dispensaries. The federal government followed with several high-profile raids in this county to reverse the sheriff's experiment in rational marijuana production. Over 500,000 Californians have medical cards allowing them to use cannabis. In the past month, numerous marijuana grows in the Laytonville area were destroyed by unidentified armed men and descended from helicopters without search warrants. We want to thank Carrie Reynolds and the KMUD News Team for permission to air the segment of last Wednesday's newscast.
Cannabis farmers and residents gathered for a meeting with Sheriff Tom Allman to discuss a string of raids in Mendocino County recently.
This Sunday, the Laytonville Garden Club concluded their Cannabis Renaissance speaking series with a Q&A with Mendocino Sheriff Tom Allman. The focus of the talk was on recent raids on local cannabis farms. Some locals claim the raids from unidentified armed men descending from helicopters to cut and leave plants and who don't have search warrants were highly suspicious, and Lear Asset Management, a private security company, has been named as possibly associated with the raids. Here's Sheriff Allman responding to that allegation.
I want to dispel rumors, however. I've already talked to a couple people who want to dispel my side of it. But as far as this, the Lear Asset Management doing raids, I want to clearly say the Sheriff's Office has never hired Lear Asset Management to eradicate marijuana and to go on people's land. The only firsthand report I've had comes from a timber company in Fort Bragg that they say, yes, they hire Lear Asset Management to go on to their property and eradicate marijuana and other things, you know, deal with trespassers and so forth on their property. And during the week of the fire, the lodge fire in Laytonville, we had several people report to me that there was activity on Woodman Canyon Road by Lear Asset Management that they were eradicating. But I've yet to speak myself, to speak to a person who says, I was there and I can clearly tell you it was Lear Asset Management. So I don't need a public debate. What I would tell you is, at the end of this, if you are a person who has firsthand knowledge, I'd like to talk to you. If a private security company has gone onto a landowner's property without the landowner's permission and eradicated marijuana, they have broken the law. But, okay? So if we get to that point where someone says, yes, I have photographic evidence or I know these people, then yes, we'll open up an investigation.
Whether the raids were conducted by a private security company, alleged rogue vigilante groups, or state or local law enforcement, witnesses claim one thing is clear. Recent raids have used armed men who have refused to provide proper identification when asked, and they have not only destroyed plants, but personal property as well. The public was asked to write their questions down for the Q&A, but after the meeting, some cannabis farmers who were raided or witnessed a neighbor's raid spoke directly to the many members of the media present. Here are two of the cannabis farmers I spoke with.
When was your farm raided?
It was raided on August 4th.
What happened and who was the authorities?
Well, I don't really know what happened or who was on my property. I wasn't there. There was no one at home at the time. And when I showed up, all my plants were chopped down, except for one, and they had drained my water tank and they had taken a knife to my yurt. So this idea that they are concerned about the drought and the water in the creek is a red herring, because why else are they draining the tank? Are they just doing it to, I don't know why, there's no good reason for it. And destroying my year-old yurt, I don't know why they did that either. And I don't know who did it, but the sheriffs say that they're the ones doing the raids, no one else. So that's about all I know.
Did you call the sheriff's office and ask what happened?
No, I am hesitant to put my head up. I don't need a target on my back. Definitely still considering putting in a claim, though, for the damage done to my yurt.
So approximately how many cannabis plants are we talking about that were cut?
I had three gardens of 25 spread over 160-acre parcel, and that's above their limits, but they left me one single plant.
My nickname is Butch, and I live in Potter Valley, and my account of what happened was these guys didn't have any badges. They had 40 caliber handguns. They stuck them in my face. They asked me for ID. I had none. They told me that they weren't going to let me leave until I produced something in my car with my name on it. Well, the only thing I had was my insurance card. So I gave them that, and they took a picture of it. And they asked me my address. I told them. They said, how many plants are you growing? I said, 25. They said, well, we'll be coming back to see you too. They go, state is 6, Mendocino County is 25. Federal zero.
Did you ask them to identify what authority they were under?
Yes, I did. I asked for badge numbers, business cards, and all they did was tell me, we don't have to give you anything. And they had on olive drab thermals, okay, underneath their t-shirts and camo. This is our ID. It said police on their shirt sleeve. And they were very intimidating. Very rude.
Sheriff Allman.
My deputy sheriffs wear camouflage pants on their bulletproof vest. They usually have an embroidered badge, or they could have a metallic badge. The back of their shirt says either police or sheriff. And please understand, Mendocino County is not the only law enforcement agency that eradicates marijuana in Mendocino County. The State Department of Justice, the Campaign Against Marijuana Planting, or it's called CCC this year, or CCP or something else, but it's the same funding as CAMP. They don't answer to me. I have gone in and when they have their briefings, and I've looked at them, I've encouraged them to not only wear the same uniforms that my deputies wear, but also have their business cards available to you. Let me tell you, the penal code says that you as a citizen have the absolute right to ask any California law enforcement officer what their name is and what their badge number is. And you have that right. It's not a police state. We will tell you if they don't have a business card, they should write it down. We do not own a helicopter. Let me dispel that rumor. We rent a helicopter. And some people say, well, why don't you put magnets on the side that say sheriff? And the answer is because helicopters are made of aluminum and magnets don't stick to aluminum. You can always get an IN number, you know, the tail number on a helicopter. If you think a helicopter is doing something abusive, we all carry cameras, you know, because they're all phones, and take a picture. I have no problem of you taking pictures of my deputy sheriffs as they're doing their work, because you're paying for our salary. The only exception to that would be if the Department of Justice came in here with their undercover people, they're going to say, no, you can't take our picture or whatever. But I can't speak for the Department of Justice. I can speak for Mendocino County Sheriff's Office.
That was Mendocino Sheriff Tom Allman speaking to an audience of about 100 people at Harwood Hall as part of the Cannabis Renaissance Speaking Series this Sunday. For KMUD News, this is Carrie Reynolds.
We would again like to thank Carrie Reynolds and the KMUD News team for that report.
The term police state is defined as a totalitarian state controlled by a political police force that secretly supervises the citizens' activities. Like Sheriff Allman stated, we are not currently living in a police state, but the activities reported are getting close to that definition. The murder of unarmed Michael Brown by a Ferguson, Missouri policeman has brought national and international attention to the militarization of civilian police forces. The militarization of policing encourages officers to adopt a warrior mentality and think of the people they are supposed to serve as enemies. Radley Balco has written a book on the topic called Rise of the Warrior Cop, where he describes the problem and points out the challenges to a large-scale reform. Former Seattle Police Chief Norm Stamper has just published Breaking Rank, a top cop's expose of the dark side of American policing. Stamper has called his orders to gas nonviolent protesters the worst mistake of his career. Senator Claire McCaskill is holding a meeting next Tuesday on the militarization of police, questioning the Department of Defense program, which supplies military equipment to local law enforcement agencies. A few cities in California are returning tanks because of the public perception that they have become the enemy.
The American Civil Liberties Union has protested at their website a report called The War Comes Home, The Excessive Militarization of American Police Policing. We did discuss the findings in this report. Everyone agrees that deadly police force is occasionally required for public safety. In March of this year, a man fleeing a murder in Oregon was chased into Mendocino Coast and ended up killing Mendocino County Sheriff Ricky Del Fiortino, a tragic loss of a brave warrior to our community. The perpetrator was shot dead by a Fort Bragg police lieutenant, and in April 2011, our community saw a disturbed young man from Fort Bragg ambush and fatally kill Jerry Mello. A 5-week manhunt ensued before a sniper brought down Aaron Bassler. Clearly, we need police who can respond in life-threatening situations.
The question in the Michael Brown case is, when are the police in life-threatening situations? And if the public protests in Ferguson, Missouri, should the police dress up in military garb and aim military weapons at citizens? Similar events happened in Oakland after unarmed Oscar Grant was killed by BART police while laying face down on the ground. And the demonstrations ensued saw a massive military-style response by police. Closer to home, last October saw a Sonoma County sheriff gun down a 13-year-old boy, Andy Lopez, who was carrying a replica gun. Numerous protests in Santa Rosa have met with police and assault rifles trained on the citizens marching to City Hall.
We would also like to discuss why, when police shoot suspects to disarm them, do they shoot to kill rather than to disable them? We realize that we're bringing many topics to this discussion and that there will be differing views on these subjects. As we approach adulthood, we would like to know that our liberties are respected and not worry that we will appear as an enemy to law enforcement. We are going to express our knowledge and opinions about how the future looks. And then in 20 minutes or so, we will ask you to call in and join the discussion at 456-9991. We host this program to increase understanding between all the age groups in our community and all the different perspectives. And despite our diversity, we are all heading into a similar future. So let's begin by going around and describe any reactions we had to the murder of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and the protests afterwards.
I think the murder of Michael Brown, from the story, well, obviously nobody has everything, like all of the evidence, everything's mostly he said, she said, but I mean, the fact that he was walking and the police told him to stop, you know, and he didn't do that for a numerous amount of seconds, that was definitely bad on his case, but he did turn around, and when he finally turned around and they asked him to put his hands up and he did, they definitely should not have opened fire on Brown.
Same here. I feel like there's been a fault in both behalves of Michael Brown. He did not respond the first time they asked him to turn around and put his hands on his head. But the second time when they asked him, he did do so. And once he did so, he got shot several times. And I believe that is a fault of the police.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's anything more to that story. It just seems like a really weak case to me, those facts that we've all been presented. It just kind of seems off.
Yeah, that's why I was saying there's obviously evidence missing and a lot of he said, she said in that area.
Yeah.
Big holes in big places. Like, for a fact, we definitely do not know all the information that has happened.
Exactly, yeah.
So, what do you guys think about the riots afterwards that happened?
I completely understand why they happened. But I also think it was people acting a little rash from them not knowing the entire story. I mean, I think it could have been handled in much simpler ways, less violent, lot less harm came to people in different ways that they could have approached it.
Yeah, which should have happened in the first place, but I mean, yeah. Since it didn't, they shouldn't have had to go and make it worse, like some extremists do in riots and protests.
Yeah.
Exactly, and a lot of people point out that police officers during the riots were wearing military gear, riot gear, things like that. But in my own opinion, that was just to protect themselves. They had bulletproof vests on to stop bullets. Rioters were throwing bricks, so they had riot headgear on, things like that. Armored vehicles. If they did have weapons, then all those things were definitely a necessity, but they can never really know. There's always a chance that someone has something like that and wants to actually do some harm.
Yes, I completely agree with the fact that everyone always gets all excited about how they're wearing all these heavy things as if they were doing something like they were going to shoot them. But how are they supposed to know? They're just supposed to prepare for the worst situation possible, and that's what they do.
Yeah, and always in riots and protests, the police are really like the main target of the people, so... I mean, if I was a police officer, I'd be wanting to wear a lot of protection.
Yeah. Because every day they say goodbye to their family, that may be the last time they get to say goodbye and or see them.
Yeah, exactly.
So how are your guys' feelings on how they just, in general, dealt with these accusations?
In the Ferguson incident?
Yes.
The accusations of what exactly?
Of exactly how the cops were at the fault of how they just point blank shot this kid. Like, and how, as what I'm trying to say is, just to look more in depth on why you think that the cop shot.
Why we think that happened?
Yes.
In my opinion, something was... I don't know.
Or something?
Yeah, I can't really say because I don't know all the details. Not really anybody does. And it's really hard to get an accurate understanding of what happened when you weren't there, when you're just hearing hearsay.
Yeah.
So, but from the details I've heard, I don't know. That just doesn't seem like a logical thing to do. If he did put his hands up and did not have a weapon, then there is no reason why a deputy should have opened fire.
Yeah, definitely not.
So there's either something, there's something we're missing, obviously.
A big something. There's just a hole right where the information just needs to be.
Exactly.
So do you guys think that racism fuels police violence towards people?
I feel like it happens because of the area, not particularly because the race or that the police don't like a certain race. I think it's just what happens to be the people in that certain area that it gets focused on.
Yeah, there's still, like, people everywhere that are, like, you know, racist. Like, you know, it's not everybody. It's just, like, some certain people sometimes. And you can't really help it, you know? Like, you can't really stop that, even though people have tried. But, I mean, no matter what, in every group, there's going to be racist people somewhere. And so I don't think that it really fuels the police violence. It just come, like, a lot of reporters try to make it come out in reports just to, you know, make more of a story.
To make more of a scene, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
To fuel it more?
Yeah, pretty much, exactly. Actually.
Do you think police and citizens view each other as enemies?
Some do. I think that some citizens most definitely see the police as a threat, but I think that's because they are worried about the maybe illegal actions that they're doing. That's why they see the police as a threat. And so since they do that, I think the police also see them as a threat because they are worried about what they're going to do. So they might do some irrational things.
Yeah, exactly. Fear makes people irrational.
Yeah. And I think the reports on the TV, actually, like Ferguson, also scare a lot of citizens, even if they're not up to illegal activities, but it just kind of like freaks them out more, you know, and tries to get them to stay away from cops or, you know, cops are bad.
Yeah.
Fuels their fear.
Yeah. But I mean, can you imagine somewhere where there was like actually no cops anywhere?
That'd be a scary, scary topic.
I would never be there.
How often do you guys see sheriffs at schools?
Well, I remember last year, like halfway through the year, like three quarters, there was like the sheriff that was there almost every single day, which is kind of freaky.
Kind of makes you feel a little insecure. Like, why is there having to be a sheriff at my school? What is happening for this to be necessary?
Especially since we go to a school with like maybe 150 people, including
max.
Yeah. Well, I mean, including the independent study kids.
Yes, that's including everyone in the high school.
Yeah.
Which just kind of makes it scary saying, like, or trying to think, like, my town is so small and so little. What is going on? What is happening to make these sheriffs having to come?
Well, I think it's also a good thing to know that if something bad did happen, if someone was breaking the law, then they're there. That's,
well, most definitely.
That's reassuring, definitely.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what really has to go wrong in Laytonville for the sheriff to, like, show up every day at the school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially a sheriff, not a deputy or anyone else. It's the sheriff. It was a sheriff vehicle.
Yeah.
And sometimes they even brought the police dogs. I remember that. I mean, like, they brought the old one, but I mean,
yeah, but then they were more still in
the
group.
So do you think when you see the sheriffs at school, do you think their guns are intimidating to you?
Not to me. I think it's just a part of their uniform. I think that it's something that they wear just kind of like the janitor wears a suit to keep their something to keep their clothes underneath clean. The officers wear their weapons belt to keep themselves just a uniform.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, before the show, that it's like, pretty sure it's mandatory for them to wear their guns and holsters at all times when they're on call.
Duty.
Yeah.
So if say they get called off school campuses, they still have to be prepared to do their actual job.
Yeah, because you don't want to have to run back to the station and run to wherever you have to go after that, because it'll just take up too much more time.
Yeah, exactly. Do you guys have any opinions on the recent raids that have been going around in the Mendocino County area? The unmarked helicopters descending and raiding people's gardens?
Well, I know from what that, I forget his name, but one of the guys on the K-Mud report said that they didn't even really, like, identify themselves. Like, I know, like, when you ask a police officer if, like, if they are, they're supposed to identify themselves. And I think if the officer, whatever department he was from, if he actually said that was, like, extremely rude and against of what he was supposed to be saying. And so I think that's completely wrong.
Yes, I don't understand, actually, why the officer, or if it was an officer, did not give their name and their badge number, because I think it actually is protocol to give such information when they are asked.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know you're supposed to identify yourself as a police officer if asked.
Yes. But my personal opinion on the raids that have been happening is I haven't really heard a whole lot of information about them, so it's not exactly a solid piece of knowledge. But just the fact that if you are growing pot and it is illegal to grow it still, it's not legal yet, that you should be expecting that something would happen. And if something does happen, you shouldn't be surprised. I mean, I know it's legal to have your 25 plants in Mendocino if you have your card.
Well, in California it is. It's just federally it's not. So
yeah.
Well,
California is 6, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit different.
Yeah. I think it's just the county that has 25.
Federally is 0. So that's why when the feds come in, they chop everything. I think it's kind of weird, though, that because I've heard from other people around Mendocino, too, that when, like, the helicopters came down, they left one also. And so that's kind of weird. Or they would chop it all down but, like, leave a couple of branches. So I don't really know what's going on there. That's kind of weird to me.
Maybe just something they missed?
Not, well, I mean, if you fly, like the guy said on the interview, if you fly down and chop down all the plants, because he said he had 3 gardens of 25 and they left 1 plant. That's kind of weird.
Maybe to send a message?
I don't know.
Yeah, sending a message, that's... Yeah, leaving one, that's really odd.
I find it odd, but I think it was maybe so they could send a message. I don't understand why they'd want to or need to after your entire garden is gone.
Yeah, I think chopping down the whole garden is enough of a message. I don't understand leaving one. Yeah. But yeah, I've actually heard that from other people around the county too. So that's kind of strange to me. I mean, I understand if it's like by a creek or something because you're like taking the water for the plants. And like, I know a couple people that it happened to. But that's because they were by the water, you know? But I don't understand if you're not right by it and they leave one. I don't know. But I think it's also extremely messed up that they, like, punctured holes in the water tank so it drained out. Like, I don't understand that. If we're going through such a drought and he has a full water tank, why would you empty it?
I think it was so he couldn't reuse the water tank maybe for growing purposes, because I don't know if it was or not, but maybe it was hooked up to irrigation lines to his plants, and that's why they punctured holes in it, so he could not re-enter that garden in this season.
Well, it probably was, but I mean, that's still like a destruction of property. It's his water tank. I mean, I live up on a mountain, and we're not on the grid, so, you know, we have water tanks, and you have the same thing.
Well, so do I. It's just we don't use our water tanks for watering our plants. We use it for our personal consuming use.
Yeah, but you never know. It could be like... That water tank could have been hooked up to both. It's not like you can really follow the lines underground and find out where they are.
Well, not everyone buries their lines.
Well, smart people don't. I mean, do. But, yeah, so I don't really understand that.
What I don't agree with, though, is them puncturing holes in this man's yurt. That is where he lived. Yeah. I don't exactly find that fair.
Yeah, it really isn't. Doesn't really make sense. So, what do you think could be done to improve relations between the police and citizens?
I'm not sure about that one. Kia, what do you think?
I think people form their opinions off of how they were treated when they were younger by the police and just how they've grown up. Just kind of your parents saying, well, I don't like these people because, or these people are great because, so you form your own opinion off of your parents. And so I think that once that is instilled into your mind, that is always going to be there bugging you and just saying, like, well, you can't trust these people, you can't trust these people, even if they do, like, try to provide. So I think it's, if when you're younger, the initial base of them being good is instilled or your personal opinion just is formed off of them by actions you see, I think that is how that it could be better.
Yeah, I've never, like ever since I was a little kid, I've always, liked police officers. I mean, I've never had a bad experience, but still when I see them, now I still get kind of anxious, you know, for, no reason at all. I'll be fine, you know. But, I mean, I still get anxious sometimes, but there's really no reason for it, you know.
Yeah, there's something in the public conscience that thinks just because, oh, this person can cite me, give me a ticket, and I'll have to pay for something, you know. People are worried about that for no reason at all, when there are actually a lot of beneficial things that police officers do that a lot of people don't realize.
That is very true. There's a lot of things that go unnoticed that the police do that are good, and people will just see them as this big, bad boogeyman figure.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for instance, driving down the highway or the freeway, and a cop's behind you, people automatically get anxious because they feel like that cop's going to pull them over for something they're doing wrong, even if they are driving just perfectly fine.
That's me.
I think it's just something that is in the back of their mind saying, well, this person can get me in trouble, so what about blah, 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 blah.
I think it's just because they're, you know, an authority figure, so, you know, they have the authority to do it, and they can, so you just get kind of, you know, nervous about it, even if you have nothing to worry about, you know? I think it's just because they're our authority, you know?
Are you saying, we try to impress them kind of authority?
Well, I mean, I'm more of, our authority, and, they can give us consequences, whether it's just, a simple ticket or, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think that's what people get so anxious about, just because they're our authority figures. I mean, we're in school, and then, how many times do you get anxious when, the principal walks in class and, calls you out or something? Calls you out to talk to you? I mean, you obviously get anxious, even if you know you've done nothing wrong, you know?
Yeah, I most definitely get anxious if I were to be called out of class.
Yeah, so I think it's just kind of, the same thing, just on a different scale, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think very much so.
Yeah.
Do you think Tom Allman has done a good job at discussing policing in our county and trying to create a legal way to produce medical marijuana? How effective do you think he's been at that?
I think he's been pretty effective at least talking to the people, you know? And I think as long as the people talk to him in a calm, respective, and manner, and you know, talking to him, that everything's fine. And so I think he's done a good job about that, keeping it calm and keeping it whatever is legal, you know? I think he's done a pretty good job at that on his own, you know?
Yeah.
Most definitely. I think he's just trying to make a community that is trying to agree with him without him breaking the laws. He's just trying to become a friend of the citizens so they will see that the police department maybe isn't as bad as their minds may think it is.
Yeah, because most of the time when people, you know, get busted from their gardens, it's the feds coming in, or they have, way too much, those crazy people that have, 400 plants on, one little square property, you know? And so a lot of times when police come and bust them, or when feds come and bust, small growers, everyone, automatically goes to the police. You know, the Mendocino police saying that they're so bad when it's not even really them doing it.
Yeah. Do you think the police and citizens view each other as enemies? I know that was a big problem in Davis recently. Is Davis acquired several MRAP armored vehicles, mine resistant, ambush protected military vehicles, and the city actually filed an injunction that made them return the vehicles and get rid of them.
Yeah. Well, I think the people are just kind of, like I said, threatened by the authority figures of the police. And the police just kind of are trying to protect themselves, since the citizens' main target is the police when things such as that go on. So I think the citizens feel threatened, and the police feel like they need to protect themselves, which, you know, kind of freaks out the citizens more when they come in with all this, protective armor and gear and stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you guys feel about having tanks and such stationed in cities where there are not military personnel there? Like, it's just a police force that have tanks stationed.
I think the tanks kind of freak me out. I mean, I don't live in a city. I've never seen, like, you know, a police officer drive a tank around the, like, city or anything. But, I mean, if I saw a tank drive around town and go to a riot, I would definitely freak out and, like, get out of there as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But I think the tank is a little excessive, but I can understand, like, the trucks, because, I mean, they have bulletproof glass and everything, so I understand that part, but, I mean, I think the tanks are just kind of over the top of everything. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to see a need for a tank in even in the most extreme riot situation. You know, I could see tanks if they were used to lob tear gas, but that would be a really big tear gas round.
That's a massive amount of tear gas.
Well, I mean, if people were, like, lighting buildings on fire and, like, destroying absolutely everything, like, with any object they could find, I would understand the use, like, the need for, like, scare the crap out of people with the tank. But, I mean, not, like, there's violence and stuff and people, like, trying to destroy stuff. But, I mean, not, like, not something that needs to be called for a tank.
I don't feel like there's a necessity for a tank. I mean, I don't know how bad it is in the cities. I've only been there a handful of times. But I don't feel like it'd be bad enough to where they would need a tank in any sort of situation.
I also feel like the word tank is really widely misinterpreted. I think people are using the word tank to describe any kind of armored vehicles that are just used to stop.
No, yeah. I think of it like a straight-up tank.
Well, that's what we think of, but if someone else saw it and they didn't know what an actual military tank looked like, they would assume that, you know, I don't know, it's just a big armored vehicle.
Yeah. So are you saying that maybe just an armored car is what people are calling these said tanks?
I think it's a
massively large armored car.
Misidentification of them. Exactly.
Well, I feel like if that might be what it is and not an actual tank that you feel like you see in your history books of the giant things with these tracks that go around shooting these massive bullets.
At like 10 miles per hour.
Wait, they shoot them at 10 miles per hour or they drive it?
They drive.
That'd be pretty slow.
That'd
pretty
be slow the world's slowest bullet.
We're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 707-456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, teachers, and concerned friends in the listening audience. Please call in if you have questions or insights about the militarization of police. Do you think that the police in our community, or in America in general, have taken the military style and mindset too far?
When you hear a report of an unarmed suspect murdered by police, do you wonder why they don't just shoot him in the arm or the leg?
Do you believe that as long as you never break any laws that you are safe from police harassment? If you are white, do you think things would be different if you were Hispanic, Black, or Native American?
Please call in and be a part of this conversation. The phone number is 707-456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we will get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of this discussion. We would really like to hear from you.
Caller, you are on the air. Now you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to thank you for this show. I think it's really, really important. I want to clear up a few misconceptions. In the intro to the show, someone said something about several deaths in the last few years in Sonoma County, and I wanted to clear up a big misconception about that because, as a matter of fact, since 2000, over 60 people have been killed by law enforcement in Sonoma County, and every single death was ruled justifiable by the DA. Now, that's since 2000, and in 2000, the California Advisory Committee to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights met in Santa Rosa to collect information regarding citizen concerns use of deadly force, lack of diversity training, lack of understanding of mentally ill people, and lack of accountability. Their concern at that time was, 15 years ago, was that 8 citizens in Sonoma County had been shot in just 2 years before that. So citizens, citizens have been mistrusting law enforcement for quite a while, and it doesn't seem like anything has changed. So Andy Lopez's death last October was the 56th death. And the reason I know all this stuff is because my own son was the 36th death in that time period in Santa Rosa. 24 years old, killed by a police officer who did SWAT as a hobby on weekends on his own time. And just like, as a matter of fact, Officer Gelhaus, the killer of Andy Lopez. So I just thought I've had several different thoughts about what you guys have been saying, and you've been saying a lot of really good stuff. I want to point up that up here in Mendocino County, I think we're in a way subject to white privilege. I mean, if we're sitting there thinking that the police are pretty nice and they probably don't get people because of their color, we've got to realize we may be white if we're saying that. And, I learned to understand this since my son died, because I've been in deep communication with a whole lot of people who've lost their kids all over the place, including the Oscar Grant people and the Andy Lopez people and people all over the U.S. This is happening about 3 people a day at least. So I don't want to bring everybody down, but that's my reality. And again, I really want to compliment you guys for having this show.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you. Same thing. I want to thank the guests, the young folks on the show, because it's an interesting and a necessary conversation that they're having. Well, a few things I wanted to touch on. With the Missouri shooting there with the youngster, I'm a 52-year-old gentleman. I have 3 kids and grandbabies by now. Probably my kids are these guests' age. But I grew up in the South, in South Georgia. In the last 7 years, I've spent 4 years in South Mississippi after Katrina. And I just got back from 2 years in Florida. And, my kids born in Humboldt and growing up here in Mendocino and Humboldt, they don't experience much institutional and cultural racism and bigotry. But, do student intern in some southern states in our country as you progress in life, and you'll understand what the prior caller was saying about white privilege. And then grown men dressed in a police uniform have tasers and weapons and radios and backups. Since when do we have to shoot and kill a teenager? And then the lady wasn't talking about tanks in if the city was Hayward. She was talking about mind suppressing. I can't even finish her description of the vehicles, and tanks aren't big, giant, ugly things anymore. And when the citizens have to fear the police militarization, we just need to look back into our past history and understand that it is something to be very concerned about. I have kids and grandkids now. We've almost weathered our time here. But, freedom is a precious, precious thing. I can tell you about my father, who gave up a lot for freedom, and I can tell you about other people who gave the ultimate sacrifice. So freedom is not something that's not worth standing up and fighting for. And the citizens had to fight. Look at the civil rights movement. I grew up in Mitchell County, Georgia. Albany was where the Freedom March started, Albany, Georgia. You just have to, you know, don't accept his story.
Yeah.
Because that's what the history they teach us is largely made of, yeah. is his story. You really have to read such books as A People's History of the United States and such as that. And I appreciate it very much. And, you know, let's just all keep on fighting for a better community and world and unity and love. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next caller, you are on air.
Hi, yes. This is Jeff Wright on the Mendocino Coast. You guys have really done your homework, and I commend you for this. Couple of things. Penal Code Section 832.5 is specifically the section that goes to citizens' complaints against law enforcement. And 832.5 in the Penal Code talks about the specifics in the way each law enforcement agency in the state of California is required to have available for citizens ways to file complaints for excessive use of force, wrongful arrest, raids without search warrants, and so forth. And it's really important for people to make those complaints because maybe the first one won't do that first person much good, but when the second, third, fifth, 12th shows up and it's similar and none of these people know each other and these records are subpoenaed in court by defense lawyers, that cop has very little credibility because he's continuing to do the same thing over and over again. And by not doing that, it's letting these bad cops get away. There are good cops out there that really do want to protect the community, but they're being completely tainted by the so-called bad apple. The other thing I want to mention to you all is in the Friday weekend edition, it says Sunday, September 7th of this year, but it's the early Sunday edition of the San Francisco Chronicle. Headline story, military weapons necessary, police say, law enforcement groups gathering for disaster drills and trade shows. This is this weekend, and it's a regional thing called Urban Shield, and it was created by the Oakland Alameda County Sheriff's Office, the very same people that tried to take out Judy Berry and Daryl Turney. And this is regional, and some of the things they say in this article are very similar to what just happened on those helicopter raids that may have had peel-off paint. Nobody seems to have seen any tail numbers. However, I experienced seeing a friend of mine's place probably about 7 years ago surveilled in very low-flying blue and white helicopters, which we tracked the number on that helicopter, and it was out of Texas. And they apparently were leased out to the DEA quite often. But they are required to give their name and badge number, and that is another reason that they can be cited by the citizens, with that 832.5 citizens' complaint against law enforcement. And quickly, some of the highlights of this article. And it's not today's Sunday paper, but it says Sunday the 7th, but it's the $1 weekend edition. It says Bay Area drills. They're going to have simulations of terrorist attack at Golden Gate Bridge, an airliner crashing into the bay, and a building collapse at Moffett Field. Cops seen as oppressors, and feds pick up the $1 million tab of this four-day event called Urban Shield. And it was started by a relatively local law enforcement, Oakland Alameda. Department of Homeland Security is picking this up. And Paul Miyamoto, assistant sheriff in San Francisco, said the chance to drill with hundreds of other agencies is invaluable and far outweighs any concern over militarization. Really? And then the quote goes on to say, this is the one time of the year when we get an opportunity like this to view the new technology, which can be a force multiplier, and for all of us in the region to come together. Well, what do I mean by all? The whole idea is to be prepared. Who wouldn't want that? Well, when you're at this end of their barrel pointing at you, or your kids are taken by Child Protective Services under the color of some kind of raid where they don't get a search warrant and all, I think there's a lot of people who don't want that, and it's really disturbing. I think it's a really important article to read. It talks about how 200 law enforcement organizations, mostly city and county police agencies, but also U.S. Army and Marine personnel and police from Singapore and South Korea are coming together with about 3,000 nurses, ambulance workers, and their volunteers, bringing the total number of people involved to 5,000. So please look up that article, and this is what is contributing. It's basically a war on our own people. I think it violates posse comitatus, and I'll leave you there.
Thank you very much. We have a
show, you guys. Good job.
Thank you. We have a 3-minute limit on calls, by the way, for all the callers. So if you have any questions after that, give us a call at 456-9991.
Or anything else to say. Yeah. Not just questions. No callers? Okay.
So how do you guys feel on the new information that has been opened to us?
The information they just presented? The callers?
Yes, by the callers.
Just a second. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to the helicopter raiding. That happened all through Laytonville also just a couple weeks ago. They were rappelling out of helicopters, chopping the plants, spraying them with a chemical, ascending back up and going to the next crop. And apparently they were doing that from grows that were very minuscule to ones that were beyond the limit. So just additional info.
All right. Thank you very much. Caller, you're on the air.
Caller, you're on. Hi, yeah, I just wanted to comment on more on the militarization of the police that you guys are talking about and how that the difference between the military and the police should be that the military serves us to combat foreign threats. And whenever the line is blurred between the military and the police, it starts to make the constituents or the sovereign people that the police are supposed to serve and the law is supposed to serve look more and more like an enemy. And I think that whenever people here in Northern California see how scalable those institutions and equipment come to be, it becomes much more apparent that these tools are not just for the really bad guys, the terrorists. They're more a form of control for the general public. And I think fear is the most important tool they have to use against us in that sense, because it's much easier to grant them these things than it is to take them away from them as far as the military equipment and weapons and such like that. So I think it's important that people pay attention to not only the changes that are happening within those departments of police and internal police orders, but also the change in perspective that is afforded them whenever they are built up in that sense to be, quote-unquote, prepared for threats.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you.
Very much so.
Yeah, so I hope that people are aware that as these things happen, it's much harder for us to come away from them and reverse what's already happened than it is to keep it from happening in the first place. So I think it's really interesting that one police department that got those two armored vehicles was actually taken away from them by the city or whatnot, because that's exactly what I think people should be doing as they become aware of, you know, tanks and things like that, and strictly military technology is being used for policing the general public within the borders of the United States. So, anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I agree with his thought on the intimidation, I guess would be a better word than the fear.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment that I have, in my past, had response from police acting as if it's them versus us situation. And I think this is a mindset that's happening in America that really needs to change. We need to be on the same side to protect our communities and protect each other and make that the focus of law enforcement instead of busting people for whatever they can to bring in income in the form of fines and penalties. And at the same time, I also would like to point out that the education requirements for police officers is some of the lowest of any profession in our society, which is appalling to me because they really do have so much authority over us. And even with the courts in place to protect us from injustices, they have all the ability to detain us, to harass us, really to ruin our lives in moments, just at their own discretion. And these are oftentimes people who are outcasts from society and have chosen to take the route of being policemen because it's a good paying, relatively, in my opinion, easy job to get that they can step into and have authority. And we need to instead bring up our policemen and pay them better and have higher education requirements so that we have more intelligent people in positions of authority in our community. And I know California's got all kinds of financial troubles as it is, but I think in a long-term situation, directing funding towards better educated police enforcement and taking away from the corporate profit-making of the jails and prisons may be a potential solution for the strife that we're seeing, that we're talking about today.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. I think a lot of education everywhere would definitely reduce the crime. And how do you think we can improve the communication between police and citizens?
Ooh, that's a good question. I can't say, because every time I see a policeman, I usually want to head the other way, and I'm usually a law-abiding citizen, so it's tough for me to know what it would take to open that up. But maybe if it came from higher up within the police system that they need to change their attitude and that they can do better for the community, that maybe it would be an intrinsic motivation for them to change their aggressive position and open up to be people of the community. Maybe they could be on the ground more instead of driving around in their cars wasting gasoline. Maybe they could be on the ground talking to people like they did in the olden days, the good old days.
Like you say, how they do in the cities, how they ride their bikes and stuff.
Yeah, and anything that gets them on the ground talking to people helps.
So they become more involved in the community.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you guys for putting on such a great show and taking the time to listen to my input.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah, you guys have a good one.
You too. caller, you're on air?
No.
Just kidding.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Jordan.
Myself, Jesse.
And myself, Kia.
Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug Free Communities Project is proud to support this month's Youth Speaks Out. Our environmental prevention strategies in the community, also known as EPIC, is a project funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working towards reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in hearing more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email Jama at jamashields@pacific.net.
Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through his website, www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. These views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are views of those who express them. Youth Speaks Out is normally aired on the first Sunday of each month. Our next show will be in 4 weeks. That is October 5th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in October.